Talking about stuff today.
We're recording and we're talking about stuff. I need to wake up.
And I feel like it's kind of hard to focus on anything at the moment, considering the whole like prepping for the potential end of the world situation.
Yeah, I think the PTSD in this city right now is insane. Like, I went and got groceries on Tuesday, and I went to Lowe's today, and it wasn't like last year, beginning of pandemic, crazy. Like, there was still toilet paper and water when I was there, but it was noticeably busier. And they were, when I went to Lowe's this morning, they were out of stuff immediately. And I went at like 8 a.m. And I've heard all over the city, like at now, if you went in the afternoon, like this afternoon, it was like bare shelves.
Yeah, I didn't even try to go to the store. I was like, that sounds scary. Not to mention they just closed the HEB that's right near me. So like,
well, the other one's opened.
The small one that's like a temporary grocery store?
Yeah, it's opened.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they don't carry that much stuff. Certainly not as much as the other place did.
I think it was either KUT or the 365 person posted, and they said it's almost entirely a full store. There's like not the bakery or the fresh deli, but it's basically HEB.
Okay, well.
Good to know.
Thanks for the update. It's definitely smaller, so I was just kind of like, if I try to go over there right now, it's going to be completely slammed. It's going to be like people going crazy, trying to buy everything, if I can even get anything at this point. So I just didn't even want to try. So as a solution to that, I just ordered like $90 worth of Chinese takeout. And I am just going to like sustain myself on Chinese takeout for the next like three to four days.
Which we love supporting local businesses.
Yeah, we love it. It's also Lunar New Year, so I was like, all right, you know, two birds, one stone, we love to see it.
Exactly.
So yeah, basically tonight I am running my dishwasher, I am doing a bunch of laundry, and I'm gonna take a long hot shower. And I basically feel like I'm like bidding adieu potentially all of like my modern resources as a human. I don't know for sure that anything's gonna happen, but everybody's kind of like, nobody knows, so prepare for the worst. Yeah, so
everyone's saying it's in no way, it's like we're going 30 hours of freezing versus an entire week of freezing. It's not gonna be last year's snowpocalypse that we had, but I think still mentally, every Austinite is kind of not convinced and still thinks that it's going to be a repeat of last year. Like, it's just me and my dog this weekend, and I'm prepared. Like, I wrapped the pipes. We got a generator just in case. Like, we got extra water, groceries, everything. We are good to go. We are going to stay warm. But I am convinced that everything will fall apart and we're going to freeze like last year.
I feel that. My situation last year, I think, was very fortunate and compared to certainly many others in that I at no point experienced planned outages last year. The only point in time when my power went out last year, it was for like probably like 36 hours. And it was during one of the second or third freezes, the power lines to my apartment just kind of iced over. So the power came back on relatively quickly. It was also towards the end of the whole debacle. The good news for me was that power outage wise, it wasn't a super huge issue last year. The biggest issue I had last year was more not having food and not being able to get more because you couldn't order delivery and the grocery store just inexplicably closed for 3 days. Yeah, it was big fear. I mean, it's pretty scary when like all of the common resources that you depend on, like the grocery store, you know, the power being on.
Yeah, true. Okay.
All right. Today we are talking about true crime. This is a podcast that is largely about other podcasts today. True crime. Why do ladies love it so much?
Yeah. So we have podcasts like My Favorite Murder or my personal favorite, Morbid. And we also, in other media, we have true crime documentaries like The Keepers or Making a Murderer. We have true crime books like I'll Be Gone in the Dark. And we have the entire ID channel, which I will watch any day. But the majority audience of that genre is women. And Vogue recently covered this topic. I thought their article was really great. And they interviewed, or at least cited, a crime psychology expert and professor at Illinois Wesleyan University. That's how you say that. Amanda Vickery. She's been cited in every single article that I've read. And she said that the interest in true crime has increased by 16%. And that's largely accredited to women and true crime podcast. And in 2018, the podcast Wine and Crime reported 500,000 downloads each month, with 85% of its total listeners being female. Another study of the same year found that 73% of all true crime podcast listeners are female. And in 2010, a study found that 70% of Amazon reviews of true crime books were by women, compared to like 82% male reviews were on books about war and shit. And while this isn't like a new thing, people have been obsessed with true crime since Jack the Ripper in the 70s. It was the serial killer golden era. People always like want to know these details, but we've seen a surge in the 2000s that we haven't seen before, particularly among women. But the question is why? Especially if it's common knowledge that women are most likely going to be the victims in these cases, why are we so attached to it?
Well, like, it's funny you should ask. God.
I thought you were not going to do it. I thought you weren't going to do it.
I said it. I did it. I said it this week, okay? I can be taught. I fully can be taught.
But you did, you got me, because you were like, well, so funny you should ask. You got me.
I know. I knew you were going to think that I wasn't going to do it because I know you have no faith in me. But yeah, I think like, that's, it's crazy how many like actual statistics there are around it, how much it's grown. Because like, I think just on a day-to-day basis, we also know that, especially in the past like 4 or 5 years, it's really made its way into the popular zeitgeist in general. Like, women plus true crime equals yes. Like, it's not just that, like, true crime is popular. It's that it is, like, widely known and acknowledged by, like, if you just say, like, oh, you know, women and their true crime podcast, like, it's kind of like a joke at this point, you know? Like, people just know about it. You know something is ubiquitous when you just say something like that. People are just like, oh, yeah, absolutely, that's a thing. I don't know if we have a stat on this. Maybe we can pull it. Like, how often, I guess it'd just be an all crime. Like, women are victims of murder versus men. But we do know that, like, statistically, women are, you know, at risk. And there's just the very, like, just the fact that power dynamics breaking down between genders. Men will, for the most part, always be physically larger and able to dominate women, which puts them always in a state of potentially higher danger. So my gut reaction to this is just like, we are subconsciously training ourselves to not get killed.
Well, your gut reaction is right. And of course we have a stat for that. Like, are you kidding me?
Bring the stat. Stat, stat, stat.
A study by the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence found that, to no one's surprise, men are more likely to commit violent crimes and women are more likely to be the victim. Although men are more likely to be murdered, which is a thing.
Really?
Yeah. But women are more likely to be victims of violent crimes. So that's including,
like, assault,
murder, assault, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So roughly 70% of the serial killer's victims between 1985 and 2010 were crimes against women. And most of those included sexual motives against women.
Very interesting.
So 70% of victims within how many decades? I'm not doing math. Decades. It was women. I know of one female serial killer. I just watched a movie about her, but I can't think of her name, which is telling. I'm also not as true crime obsessed, I suppose. I just listen and like it. But I know of one female serial killer. They exist. There's several couples that kill. Just largely, women are the victims and men are the perpetrators. But you're right. Your gut reaction was right to that. So I read like so many articles, and they basically were saying the same thing, that there are a few reasons why women are so attracted to true crime. And I kind of narrowed those down to: true crime highlights the thought process of criminals, and then we use it subconsciously and consciously, pick up tips of how to not be a victim by consuming true crime media. And then it gives us a sense of justice to see the bad guys get caught, kind of helps our anxiety with it. But let's touch on the point that you brought up, that we watch it to kind of know what to look out for.
Yeah, to like be on the lookout, to hear examples of stories like what not to do. I mean, obviously, a lot of this stuff still happens today. But I feel like at least in the kind of stories that make it into the popular culture around true crime. Like, I'm thinking like Ted Bundy and stuff like that, or like these ridiculous, like insane massacres that would happen at like nursing colleges or something like that. You know, a lot of the stories that I automatically think of when I think of true crime are like from the 70s or earlier.
Right, like the serial killer, like golden age is the 70s.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like how many movies are there about Ted Bundy? Like, there literally a new one just came out with Chad Michael Murray starring as Ted Bundy.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I watched like 10 minutes of it. It was so bad.
We really need to talk about the romanticization of Ted Bundy, yes, as part of this, which I think is like so incredibly problematic. But also, like, there's a reason that this type of thing was able to thrive so much in the 70s. And I think it has a lot to do with that was the birth of the Stranger Danger era, you know,
right,
because like people were so like, oh, just trust everybody around you. And I think that I don't have a specific number for this, but it's definitely, I feel like everybody's heard the anecdote that like most assault, most like violent crime, like is perpetrated by someone who you know.
Right.
So I think that especially for women, and that's still very much being an era where women were taught to like be nice and smile and talk to everybody, we've kind of evolved past that as things like the girl boss movement and all of that have how arguably not great they are for feminism in general. I do think that we are fortunate enough to have evolved to a time period now where, like, that is at least less expected of women in mainstream society, for them to just, like, run into someone on the street and be like, oh, yeah, I'll help you with this thing, or, like, talk to them, like talk to people and be quote unquote polite. Like, that expectation from women, I think it historically the kind of expectation that led to a lot of these situations that could turn into mass murders or them being the victims of serial killers, because these were generally, I mean, even if you think about someone like Ted Bundy, who, I mean, now is kind of thought of as this guy who could lure pretty much anyone into any situation because he was conventionally attractive for the time. So you do have situations where like women are pulling over on the side of the road to like help him fix his car, and then he's like hitting them over the head with a crowbar. And I think a lot of the expectations of women to just be quote unquote nice probably played into those situations being allowed to play out the way that they did.
So you touched on it a little bit, but I did see in one article they talked about how, you know, how comfortable are we getting with this true crime genre, like how desensitized are we to applaud when, so she said that she was listening to My Favorite Murder, like a live taping of it, and people cheered when they said that they were going to be covering Ted Bundy, and she was like, why are this, like, I felt icky after listening to that, and yeah. I get that, like, why are we cheering, why are we romanticizing, why are we putting like Zac Efron, Chad Michael Murray as this serial killer, and during his trial, quote-unquote fans of his, girls fawning over Ted Bundy, were in the courtroom and just like so like in love with this man who just committed all these horrible crimes. So there's that aspect of the true crime genre that people are monetizing off of crime, and I think that some podcasts don't do a good job at it, and they don't really listen to the victims' families, etc. I think there are some podcasters that do it very well. We have like serial, like more documentary style, that's one thing, but I mean like actual, like morbid things like that. And I'm biased with Ash and Elena. I really like them. I think that they're sensitive to, they've had victims' families on before. They remove media if families ask for it, and they're sensitive to it.
It's definitely a tough line to walk, because the reality is, you know, when you're making any kind of true crime media, like when you're, whether it's a podcast or like you're a YouTuber, it's like Unsolved Mysteries or something like that, or even if it's like a documentary on Netflix, ultimately, the primary motivation for that is entertainment. And so it's a very touchy line to walk to be like, okay, how do we prioritize entertainment? Because that's our goal as like a provider of entertainment, but also present this in a way that doesn't feel like we are capitalizing on people's deaths.
Right. Yeah. And I agree. So yeah, so we have that kind of gray area of true crime media. So then we have the other side of it where, in which you also kind of touched on, women are less likely to be polite to men simply because we're women and they're men, and stop for people and help, like, be charmed by this man who, like, needs help to his car or whatever, and then get killed because of true crime podcasts. Like, so many, like, let's just take My Favorite Murder, for example. They have a tagline because it's, like, fuck politeness, or stay sexy and don't get murdered, whatever you want to use. But fuck politeness has saved lots of lives.
Yeah.
And because it's taught women, fuck politeness. Like, I don't need to be nice to you. I need to save my life. Because I don't know, because women, as we'll get into later, we are constantly, like, we are raised from birth in a patriarchal society. And we are constantly in fear of becoming the next victim because we consume so much true crime. But it's also, as we'll get into, we identify with these people in, like, inherently.
I think it's, like, such an interesting dissonance as well that, like, as women, part of the reason we tend to try to take up less space and try to be nice to people and not leave a bad impression on people is to the end of trying to not give anybody a reason not to like us that would lead to us potentially getting hurt in some way.
Yeah, and whether that's, like, literally telling a man to fuck off and not helping him, or just calling services of some sort. I'm not advocating to call the cops in every situation, of course not, but calling for help in some situation where maybe it's not as suspicious as it feels, but it's better, like, it's okay to not be polite in these situations if you're scared.
Yeah,
these true crime podcasts are educating in that way, so I think that there are good aspects.
It's weird to think that like women kind of have these tendencies to do those things, to be nice in situations because they think it's going to stop them from getting hurt, but then that very behavior gets exploited. Like, the value of these kind of podcasts to kind of rewire our brains and think, like, here's what happens to women who are nice to random men in the street and don't just tell them to fuck off.
Right.
Which is, like, too real. Versus, like, how many versions of podcast, or how many, like, versions of true crime have you heard where, like, a woman told a man to fuck off and then he just killed her in the street? I feel like that doesn't happen nearly as much as the former.
I mean, there are countless stories of women rejecting men, like, their advances, and then being killed for it. There's this one story of a maintenance man at a apartment complex making advances on the tenant and her rejecting them, and he had a key to her apartment, so he stayed in there and then killed her. Yeah, just, so it can happen if you tell a man to fuck off. But that's the thing. So, like, as I was saying, these categories of why we're so intrigued by true crime when we're typically the victim anyway, like, why do we want to watch ourselves be killed? It's because Vickery, this psychologist that Vogue interviewed and that everyone interviewed, she says that even though women fear becoming the victims themselves, they're interested because it helps them understand how the crime is perpetrated and, like, what triggered the attacker. How do you spot red flags to know who's going to be an attacker? How do you escape? How do you avoid being a target, etc., etc.? And women subconsciously absorb this information on coping with these horrible situations, like getting murdered, and the tricks to recognize the signs that could lead to some similar situations, because we just connect with the women in the show immediately because we also feel that fear of potentially being the victim. So seeing women as the victims, we're able to, like, place ourselves in their shoes.
To that same end, the other thing that, you know, I think is just a very real human experience, like, why do we tell stories at all? It's to make things live on past their mortal lives. And I think that, you know, I'm sure that, like, this is debatable, especially, you know, when you have, like, that perception that potentially exists around, like, oh, what's your motivation for telling this story? Like, are you trying to profit off of it or whatever? But ultimately, by telling these stories, like, these women can live on through the stories of what happened to them. And hopefully it can be more than that.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that probably, like, a good thing to keep in mind, advice to all true crime podcasts, is to, like, talk about the people who are actually behind these. Like, talk about the people in addition to the death, in addition to the circumstance.
Like, their death shouldn't be the most lasting thing about them.
Exactly. And media about true crime tends to focus on the person who kills them, because that tends to be, like, the antagonist. Like, from a storytelling perspective, you can see how they would be kind of, like, viewed as the most interesting character, or the person you really want to know everything about. But I think in, like, flipping that script and focusing more on the victims, like, I'm already thinking, like, as I'm saying this, a really, really good example of this that I always think of when I think of, I mean, it's literally not true crime, it's a fictional story, but I think that it's a great blueprint for this kind of thing, is The Lovely Bones.
Oh,
and the way
yeah.
that the way that entire story gets told, like by her from the afterlife after she does exactly that. She's like nice to one of her neighbors and ends up getting killed for it. I love the way that they tell that story through her perspective of like watching over her family after she dies and watching her murderer just kind of like go on with his life and like plot against other girls and things like that and you know, kind of trying to influence his downfall from beyond the grave. And you kind of learn about her childhood leading up to that. I don't know. I just think that what that story does really well is it gives so much agency to the victim in that story. And I think that's like what I would love to see more of. Like, yes, we can talk about the sadistic serial killers and like wonder about the emotions and the mentality of like who could possibly do this sort of thing, but I think that has to be tempered with a fair amount of agency to the victims. And I think we can do that by talking more about who they were before they got killed.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, beyond oh, their smile lit up every room, et cetera, like the cliche things.
Yeah.
But I mean, and the reason for that, of course, is that we're so intrigued by how could someone do this to another human? Because most of us will never do that. Most of us don't have those tendencies or that desire to hurt another human that way.
Yeah.
And so like the interest in what made them do that, what led up to that, what broke this person so that they hurt another person. So if it's different, it's intriguing, but that does help lead the genre into more of a desensitizing us to these stories and then glorifying the murderers in a way.
And also I think that it puts an emphasis on the insanity to be able to do that kind of thing. And then we kind of, I think, incorrectly apply that to other real world situations. Like when you think about how many mass shootings go on in America and how many conversations there have been around like, oh, we don't need better gun laws, we need better mental health care, which like, yes, we do need better mental health care, but ultimately convenient for us to believe that people would do things like that are not in their right mind, when in fact there are a lot of examples of people who are perfectly in their right mind and make the conscious decision to, you know, shoot up a school, whether it's in the name of their political or personal beliefs or what have you. Unfortunately, it's like statistically more likely that somebody executes some kind of mass terrorist attack like that completely in their right mind and with intention versus randomly as an act of insanity.
And then in the same way, like you mentioned earlier, most violent crimes happen by somebody you know. And so then if we create this like monster out of serial killers by, you know, making them the forefront of these stories, then we don't see those flags in our partners or in our family. And so we don't take them as seriously in relationships when people to hurt us physically, like are most likely to be our partner or someone that we know in real life and not some stranger.
Well, and I think that brings up, so you said something earlier too about Ted Bundy and about like the fans that he had and like the people who like thought he was cute and all of that. The combination of that and the just willingness to not see these things in people who we know and love in our lives, it's a really kind of interesting dissonance that goes on. Like, this is a very common thing in like Disney movies, like especially old Disney movies, right? Like, we are conditioned to believe that we should fear ugly people and trust beautiful people. In the absence of true crime media entirely, I think that we would still potentially be looking for these signs that are like the opposite of what we're looking for. Like fearing homeless people because they're homeless for some reason. Like not having a real willingness to, you know, critically think about the tendencies that are being displayed in our family members or the people who we, you know, our friends, the people who we choose to have close in our lives. It gives us the tools to kind of like snap back into what we should actually be paying attention to, so we can hopefully notice these things before other people get hurt or we get hurt. I don't know. I just think it's kind of crazy that like Disney movies conditioned us to believe that we should not trust ugly people. And then Ted Bundy came along like, I'm conventionally attractive. Like, what should I do with this? And it's like, you could be a model. You could, nah, I think I'll murder women. Like,
I mean, in all media, really, not just Disney. Like, and we were talking about Euphoria in our last episode in a different aspect, but so many red flags in Nate. He's an abuser. He's a horrible person, but he's hot. so we listen.
Yeah.
And like, that's the same throughout so many shows, is that you want to root for the attractive people, even if they're bad. And the actor that plays with Jacob, whatever, he said, like, you're not supposed to like him. Like, he's not a good guy. And same thing with Ted Bundy. Like, he had fans because he was attractive and he was a lawyer and he was smart, or a law student. Sorry, I'm not claiming him.
A law student. Yeah.
But, you know, he was smart and charismatic. He was into politics and whatever. And so we just, you know, women just listened to him. And they were like, no, there's no way. He's like sitting there admitting to it.
Yeah. In another life, the man would be like JFK, you know? But instead, he murders women.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's like not an isolated event. Not every murderer is ugly. Like, there are plenty of attractive murderers. And the same thing happened to them. They were able to get their victims by being attractive, and no one questioned it.
Yeah, by the combination of being attractive, and so women are automatically more trusting of more attractive people, and then exploiting the fact that women are just kind of, especially in the eras, in this golden age of serial killers, have been conditioned and taught, and it's been beaten into their heads that they have to be nice to everybody all the time, even people they don't know.
So category number two, like, that's similar to category number one. So we're able to watch decades of these stories played out on TV. Like, every, they make movies and documentaries on every serial killer these days. And, or in podcasts, you get a new murder every week, Dateline, etc. We listen to these stories, we watch these stories, we consume this media, and we pick up the tips that we've, as women, most of us have been taught our whole lives. You know, don't walk alone at night, always carry pepper spray with you, like, dress conservatively, etc., etc. And we see, like you were saying, like, in the 70s, women hitchhiked. They took rides from strangers. They helped men who with, quote-unquote, broken arms and said they needed help because they were attractive. They did all these things. And we know, obviously, you don't do those things anymore. But then the more recent murders, we can watch these and just know what to do. Make sure you lock your doors. You know, make sure you lock your windows.
Speaking of all of this, though, never mind the physical world. Like, it is always in the back of my head that, like, I could go on a date and, like, best case scenario, it's a good date. Worst case scenario, I'd literally get killed. Like, online dating culture comes with so much built-in modern fear about, like, holy shit, what could I possibly be getting myself into? And it almost, like, recreates that circumstance that in the real world we've been untrained to do. Like, be nice to everybody. Whereas, like, if you're talking to some guy on Tinder who you think is really cute and nice and you want to meet him, like, of course you're going to be nice to that person because you have something potentially to gain from it. And then you go out to dinner and it turns out that you were catfished, and then you get, like, axe murdered? No thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I am very fortunate to not date men in that regard. I hate the horror stories that all my straight friends tell me, or friends that date men tell me. Yeah, the biggest fear, like, I was never scared that my date was gonna kill me. I was scared that someone might kill me for being on a date with a girl, but never that my date was going to kill me. And I've literally had friends that go on dates with men, text, like, send me screenshots of their photos, tell me where they're going, give me their number, the license plate of the man, all of these things, just in case. Like, he seems nice, he seems fine, he's like a real person, he's on Instagram, but, like, just in case something happens, this is his information. Like, that's terrifying.
It is terrifying. And, well, I mean, like, and like we've said, like, the scary thing is that people can seem really charismatic, or, like, be really cute, or, like, meet all of the standards that we would typically classify as not a sociopath. And then, like, these can be the people who end up doing these kinds of things. So, yeah, it's very real. I mean, I think between online dating and even, like, every time I get into an Uber, I, like, hold my phone in my hand the entire time and, like, watch the direction that the person is driving in.
I have not gotten into cars before because the license plate didn't match the profile. And they're like, I got a new car. And I was like, I don't care, I'm not getting in your car. And, like, yelled at me to get in the car. Like, absolutely terrifying. But, yeah, it's everywhere. The people that we date, the people that drive us places.
Even despite the progress that we've made in, like, quote unquote, the way women are supposed to act, it's still, like, we are still taught and programmed to understand that we are in danger at all times. And we have all of these little, like, subconscious tics and little behaviors that we do everywhere we go to protect ourselves from potential danger. Again, like, just because women are not expected to just kind of like be polite and like a man like reach something in his shed, like, because it'd be impolite to not do that, we are still kind of operating on this system of belief that like we are in danger at all times and we must constantly be doing something to protect ourselves, whether it's like walking with our keys in between our fingers, crossing the street because we're just like nervous that we're being followed, or I mean, like, what have you. There's just so many things where like just as and again, I think it kind of goes back to that fact that like, even though, you know, we've come a long way on gender equality and like a woman can do any man or a woman can do any man
true with consent.
I mean, true with consent. That's not even what I meant to say, but I meant it somewhere in my head. I guess I must have meant it. A woman can do any job a man can do, like
while bleeding.
Popular culture says feminism, capitalism says feminism, which is mainly the reason that it's okay now. Like, at some point the capitalists realize like, oh, by treating women like people we could get them to spend more money on shit, which, whatever, okay, fine. Even in spite of all of that, a male is going to probably be larger and stronger in many scenarios than like most women. Certainly stronger than me, because I'm a large noodle. I have no upper body strength. If someone tried to hurt me, I would pretty much just flop over immediately. I don't think I can't outrun anybody. Like, I'm not the person that would survive. I'm not like a zombie apocalypse survivor. Like, I'm like, sacrifice me, I'm going to be the first to go anyways.
I have a little brag moment. I don't know if this is good or not, but it's improvement. Speaking of being strong noodles, I know you might not know what this is, but I did a hex bar deadlift today. It's a thing that you pick up and you put down, and it's the one I'm the best at, and I got a new personal record. I did 200 pounds and I lifted it and put it back down 12 times.
Nice, bruh. That's amazing.
Thank you. Gnarly. I picked it up, put it down. So I probably won't die first in a zombie apocalypse, but...
I think you're a gym rat now. That's insane. That is truly insane. Do you even lift, bro?
Yeah, but I love my trainer. She has a great podcast, too. It's about sports. It's called Bitches Love Sports, so check that out. Anyway, so yes, what you're saying, though, brings up the question. Like, I completely get this because I... literally talked to my therapist about this. My last session with my therapist was, I feel like I'm like paranoid with men, but I don't know how to, with like their motives, but I don't know how to separate it from just being a woman and being paranoid. Like, how much am I, oh, this is normal behavior? She was like, well, maybe you should stop listening to true crime podcasts. And I was like, well, first of all, no, absolutely not. But second of all, like, probably right. But it fits in every facet of our life. And we have this fear constantly. Why then do we choose to consume more of this? And like the most resounding answer is that it literally validates our fears. Like, it makes us feel not alone to know that other women experience this, whether in liking the media or being in the media and being the victim.
Yeah. Similar can be said for like every person of all genders who just like horror movies. You know what I mean? Like, why do you keep subjecting yourself to being terrified? I mean, there's the thrill component of it where it is just like entertaining to be like, oh my God, how can there be people like this? There is the component of it that's like, I'm subconsciously training myself to not get killed. Like, no one wants to be that, you know, the trope of like the first girl in every horror movie who's always like a big boobed blonde girl who's like the first to die because she goes into the basement.
Since we've evolved in including quote-unquote diverse cast in movies, because blonde girl always, but then it's the person of color, typically a black girl, and then the gay one, and then the blonde. It's one of those three every single time is the first one to die. And if they're not the first, they're the second and the third.
And no one wants to be one of them. So you're like observing what they're doing. And basically, like, your key takeaway is usually like, oh, if it seems like your boyfriend is going into the basement to play a sexy prank on you, don't go down there because you're probably going to get murdered. So like, those are the things we take away from those things subconsciously, right? But I think that you said something about not feeling alone. And I mean, I do think that another component, just like completely independent of like the actual experience of listening to this stuff, is that it has a built-in community. Like, as a woman, if you start being into true crime, you're just gonna automatically have like something you can put in your Bumble BFF profile and find other like-minded people who enjoy things.
That is how we met. Yeah, that's how we met. But I also pretty sure, and I haven't been on Bumble in a while, but I'm also pretty sure I had like true crime podcast in my bio.
You definitely did. And I don't think I specifically had true crime podcasts, but just like anybody who likes podcasts, I'm like, I like people who like podcasts. And it becomes kind of like, I feel like we talked about this a couple episodes ago.
What if they listen to Joe Rogan?
Oh my God. Okay, if they say they like podcasts, I don't think they're talking about Joe Rogan. If they listen to Joe Rogan, I mean, first of all, how many women are listening to Joe Rogan? That's concerning.
Probably some.
Probably some is right. It's definitely a non-zero number, which hurts me as a woman. But yeah, just suffice it to say that I think like the idea that when you like something like true crime podcasts, you can like move to a new city and easily find friends who you have a common interest with, or like go to a live show and meet new people, or like join a local fan club chapter, or I don't know what people do, you know what I mean?
Right. No, I'm on Facebook groups that, with the caveat of, they have mostly moved away from the being fans of the podcast. And like, I'm in two or three groups, it's for the same podcast, but it's like, you're fans of that podcast and you also like Taylor Swift, so it's mainly Taylor Swift, or you're fans of this podcast and you also live in Austin. That's how I've met several of my friends, like through that group. And yeah, it brings people together.
It's like built-in community, and we love that. Well, and then I think also from the perspective of like, why women, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point, where you're in groups and it's largely women, and men are getting told that true crime podcasts are for women, and so they're not going to listen to true crime podcasts because now they've been informed that listening to true crime podcasts is something that women do, and God forbid men do anything that women do, because everything that women do just automatically is like bad or shamed for some reason, especially if it's something that like teenage or like young girls do. Okay, like honestly, I think it'd be pretty weird if you have men who are into true crime, like for why? Are they all just like, oh, I just love to hear stories about men who murder women? Of the two people who you can relate to in that scenario, it's probably mostly going to be the murderer.
So obviously there's caveats of gender and race and of fans in every group. But there was a study in one of the articles that I read that said both genders, this study followed the binary. They just said both genders. So both genders got scared at certain points in watching or listening to crime stories. But the women experience, I think, I want to say it was like maybe 33%, just a higher rating of anxiety while watching these or consuming this media. But they also rated much higher than men in wanting to continue the story. Men were like, take it or leave it. It is what it is. I don't need to know what happened. Same old story. The women were like, I need to know. I need to know what happened. I need to know if she survived. I need to know, like, who killed who, et cetera, et cetera. Like, they wanted to consume more versus the men were just not interested.
That's really interesting. So I wondered, like, the study that they did, like, did it attribute that to anything specific? Because I have thoughts on what that might be, but I wonder if they, like, measured what the reasons might be.
The article kind of just went over all of the reasons I'm going over. Like, first, of course, the thrill of it. The whodunit. We empathize with the victim. We see ourselves in the victim. We want to learn how not to be the victim. And then which we'll get to soon is it gives us a sense of justice to see the bad guy get caught.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think probably like what I can imagine being the case, like as a woman, is like the need for resolution to just like generally to find out what happens. And then also, I think just probably like higher rates of empathy, whereas like whatever it may be, like it just seems to be like very ingrained in us to care more about others, how like us in relation to others, like both of those things. It seems more commonplace for women to experience that strong feeling that they need to do that than it is for men. I don't know, I think would lead me to believe that just like the empathy for it to like need to hear the story from start to finish and want to know what happens. Like personally, if I got halfway through a horror story and it didn't get resolved and I just like went to bed, I would not be able to sleep. I would be like, oh my God, literally, what? was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the scariest ones are the ones that are unsolved, right? Good segue then. So Ray Gandhi, psychotherapist and counselor that Vogue also interviewed, suggested that because women are often the victims or survivors rather than the perpetrators, we're drawn to the true crime stories for a sense of justice. So we watch these stories with endings where the legal system got it right and the bad guy went to jail. And so to ease our constant fears of being the victim, so to know that that bad man is no longer out there, and it creates potentially a false narrative, which potentially is used very loosely because it's mainly a false narrative, that bad guys always get caught, justice is always served.
We know that's not true.
Yeah, we just to clarify, but we clearly want to make a big point here, is that these studies, it's pretty clear that predominantly white millennial and Gen Z women are responsible for this like surge in true crime interest. And that's mainly because of two factors that kind of create this like huge dynamic. It's media bias, both large and small scale. And I mean that on like national news versus a true crime podcast. In both cases, they create these cult followings behind stories of young white women that go missing or are murdered while ignoring the stories of people of color. Combine that with the fact that all of these like quote unquote big stories in the true crime world, like Ted Bundy, the Golden State Killer, etc., etc., most if not all of their victims were white women. And so it's like that whole dynamic of like seeing yourself in the media. You want to hear stories about yourself, so you listen to stories about yourself. And so they're talking about crimes where most of the victims, if not all the victims, were white women, and then those are the stories that are on media, so those are the girls that we want to see, etc., etc. The big circle of it all, it creates the white girl syndrome. Missing white girl syndrome is Gabby Petito.
Exactly. I was going
to
say.
Who deserved to be found and didn't deserve what happened to her at all, but in any means.
But like no more and no less than any person of color.
Exactly. And the entire nation got behind finding this woman within weeks. Meanwhile, there are countless stories of women of color, indigenous women that have been missing for years, and not a single news media has covered it. Missing white girl syndrome takes over the true crime community and disproportionately,
and I think compounded by that, how many examples are there of like women whose stories never got told because they happened in eras where women of color stories just didn't get told nearly as much as white women? Like, white women have just been better represented for longer in media, in just like the general care of the public for a lot longer than people of color have had. I'm not even going to say the same care, because obviously we haven't even gotten to the point where there's equal care for this kind of thing. I think that the most that we can do as individuals, and this is true, I think, of true crime and really all kinds of media, all kinds of stories, really just in an effort to understand the perspectives of people who are not like you. Like, you have to make a conscious effort, because it is like kind of by default you are going to gravitate towards media and stories that you can easily see yourself in, which is very easy as a white person because like that's most of it, right? But I think that the more we can all make conscious efforts to consume stories both about true crime and like all media at large that centers the perspectives of non-white people, the more we can learn to empathize with that and also treat it as a society with the same weight that we seem inclined to treat the disappearance of like some white
girl. Several articles that I read mentioned that true crime podcasts have noticed this and are, whether it's like course correcting themselves or just trying to push towards covering those kinds of stories about people of color that have gone missing or murdered. There have been several documentaries come out about indigenous women that have gone missing in Canada. True crime stories about black men falsely arrested for crimes, and et cetera, et cetera. There's sprinklings of it starting now, and several of the articles pointed to that. But of course, with the clarification that like it's not nothing to the same level, it's still extremely disproportionate. There's also the presumption for victims that can be portrayed as innocent. So like sex workers, trans women, indigenous women, people struggling with addiction or facing homelessness, they're all more at risk to be the victims of violent crimes, but are rarely at the center of true crime media. I think the best way to like say what we're saying in a concise way, to quote Kate Tuttle of the New York Times, any assumption of identification and solidarity is fraught, especially in a world in which white female victims are elevated to an almost cult status, while women of color who are murdered at a higher rate are too often ignored. I thought that was a really great quote, and it sums up the entire issue behind race and the true crime obsession in covering different cases.
Yeah, it's definitely a very real problem. I know it's a tough thing to talk about too, because like it's not like either of us, I think, have a solution to this. The reality is, like, we hear about stories through whatever channel, whether it's through podcasts or like Gabby Petito like blew up on TikTok, which is how a lot of people found out about like what was going on with her. It's what the news media decides to talk about. It's like the kind of thing that unfortunately we can't fully control, and as individuals, it's more, I think, on, it's more the responsibility of people who talk about true crime to talk about specific instances with victims of color, and also like the popular news media to pay more attention to those types of stories, because like those channels are not talking about a murder that, like, unless you're gonna like listen to a police scanner all day, then you're just not gonna know that those are even happening. And we can't have the kind of like groundswell tidal wave type attention around the things that happen that bring justice about, like what happened with Gabby Petito, if we don't have access to that information.
Yeah, and there are true crime podcasts that specifically cover missing and murdered women of color. The Black Girl Gone is one of them that I would recommend. But yeah, you're right. And we didn't want to be a true crime podcast, except for what I just mentioned. We don't need another true crime podcast.
Certainly not another true crime podcast by two white girls. Like, that's just not the POV that anyone in the world needs.
Exactly.
But I do really like the idea of calling attention to, you know, if you are a person who consumes true crime podcasts, it might be worth thinking about diversifying. Like My Favorite Murder is great. We know it's like the cult favorite.
Not a fan. I used to be, but I'm just not there anymore. I like Morbid. That's my go-to.
I mean, like, people are going to get to the end of this episode and find this out, I guess. But, like, I literally don't listen to true crime podcasts.
You fake. Oh, my God. As a white woman.
I know. I'm a fake fan.
A white woman podcast history to the tune of Bo Burnham's A White Woman's Instagram. And it's just true crime podcast.
I know. As a white woman, how dare I? And it's not, I literally don't listen to it. Fictionalized true crime, which I think can actually be called fake crime. It's definitely like a genre that I'm into. We were talking about this earlier, that I just recently, by recently, I mean yesterday, watched all of The Woman Across the Street from the Girl in the Window, which is like a hilarious pastiche / satire of like the whole Gone Girl, domestic murder, horror genre. And I thought that, like, in terms of, like, fictionalized versions of these kind of things in media, I thought that entire show did a really good job of, like, calling out some of, like, the most ridiculous tropes in fiction version of this genre. So, like, that kind of stuff I tend to be really into. That's, like, a whole other can of worms, like, that you get into. I mean, like, it's almost kind of, like, a different subculture of, like, the women who read, like, I don't know, books like The Woman on the Train and Gone Girl and The Woman in the Window, or like whatever that movie was called. Or you kind of like know the tone that I'm talking about, right? Like, it's different than like a true crime podcast. And I think that like the type of people that it attracts is definitely different. Like, I think it kind of skews more of like Gen X to boomer focus almost, because it tends to be like, when I think of stuff like that, I think of like suburban women who like have a book club and they like drink wine and read Gone Girl. So it's kind of like, it's different, but it's kind of like, it's like same girl, different font.
Yeah, it was silly. It was mainly like, you had to know, I mean, I felt like you had to know it was a parody to know it was a parody. Because at some points it was just like, that was silly. That was dumb. Oh, she's drinking an entire bottle of wine like every 5 seconds. That's weird. And stuff like that. But like, I knew instantly from the title, because I watched the other movie or show that was about. But
I didn't even watch what it was based on, but I just looked at it and I thought like, that sounds like a bit from 30 Rock or like SNL or something like that. Like, you just see the title of it and you're like, there's no way that's real. And it's Kristen Bell. So, like, Kristen Bell generally does not do serious dramatic roles. So I kind of like saw the whole thing and I was like, I have a feeling this is going to be kind of funny. But I liked the way that they framed it, is it kind of gets like more and more preposterous with every episode. That's why I say it's like more of a satire than a parody. I guess, I don't know. I guess at the same time, like, the use of the word satire is probably, I saw a TikTok about how the word satire can really only be applied when it's trying to elevate like political ideals and things like that, which, like, I don't know, maybe the use of the word satire is incorrect in this scenario, but like, I think that the fact that it was almost trying to be more of like a pastiche of the genre that progressively became a joke, to kind of show you by like overplaying those beats, like how much wine she drinks and the fact that she keeps like trying to like grab casserole dishes out of the microwave with no oven mitts on.
How many casserole dishes does this woman own is the real question.
Oh my God. Literally so many. So many of them are identical.
They're like that vintage style that a lot of people like love, those dishes. And I was thinking every single time she dropped them, my cousin's heart was like breaking because she loves those.
Oh my God. I think that too, because like, I mean, all of the ones that they got for the show had to have been like sourced vintage. I don't think they make them anymore. They're Pyrexes. And she's literally just like smashing them left and right. Like, she just keeps walking outside and then getting nervous and dropping them. And I'm like, girlfriend, you need to stop. The fact that like, she used to be an artist, but she hasn't really painted since she lost her daughter. And like, I don't know, there's just...
And it's just like flowers.
I loved, my favorite bit was her handyman who's been fixing the mailbox for years.
Who's fixing the mailbox, which he actually, that actor, he played a murderer, I forget his name, Ed Gein, I think, amazingly in, what's that movie, that TV show, Jonathan Groff was in it, but yeah, so it was great. He played a murderer on that show, and he was great. But yeah, he's just fixing the mailbox for years, and it's like, dude.
For literally years. Every single day for the entire show, you just see him outside fumbling with the mailbox, and it's canonical that she pays this man to fix their mailbox, and he's just apparently been doing it forever. He's just like outside, not working on anything but the mailbox.
Yeah, it was. And then the daughter was like eaten by a serial killer. And it's like, what?
Oh my God. Killed and eaten by a serial killer on take your daughter to work day with her dad, who's in the FBI. Like, it's so absurd, but they don't play it. Like, it's very obviously like,
they're dead ass. Like, the whole show.
Everyone is so dead ass. And that's what like makes it so good. Like, the fact that they're playing this, like, all of everything they're saying is so totally legit. And it's super, super funny. And I think that it just does a really good job of like poking fun at that whole genre. But it, I don't know, like, it is just kind of funny to me because like, very obviously, like, that is a parallel like subgenre example of like women, and I think in some cases an entirely different generation of women who are also obsessed with these stories about like women getting killed. It goes to show that it like it transcends like this is a cultural phenomenon. Like, it is really something that people have been interested in for a very, very long time. And in like...
I mean, yeah, You is the number one show for a reason when it comes out and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's funny because, like, then I think about You, and You is kind of, like, the perfect example of, like, what I was saying about the kind of show that centers on the perpetrator and not the victim. I mean, obviously, like, through his obsession with his victims, like, we learn about the victims through that. Like, in season one, we learn so much about Beck because he's, like, literally stalking her. But, like, we learn about it through him, and Beck has, like, no agency.
Yeah, and then also the same point of being the attractive person that we don't question. Of all these, like, fairly obvious things happening around this man, and we don't question it.
Oh, yeah, literally, Penn Badgley had to come out and be like, you are not supposed to be attracted to this guy.
Yeah, same thing as the actor that plays Nate on Euphoria. It's just like, stop finding these abusers and these horrible men attractive.
And it just goes to show that, like, I mean, like, I think that we know that Hollywood is explicitly casting people like this, like hot men, to play these characters to exploit the fact that we have this dissonance between like believing that attractive people are safe people and ugly people are dangerous people. But we literally can't reconcile in our stupid little lizard brains that like attractive people bad. not as a rule, but in these cases, like, it's like we cannot, like, we're still gonna watch the show and be like, but like, I'd still date him though. And like, that's weird. That's weird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's weird. It's weird that we have this need to consume the media that is literally causing our fears, and because we just have such like a need for community and having our fears validated. It's weird that there's a market for that, but of course there is, and of course I personally probably will continue to consume it.
Yeah, maybe the other reason women like true crime podcasts is just because we're all just sick motherfuckers, you know?
Well, I did see some commentary, not very much, but some commentary on, we're going into year 3 of the Panorama. We are fucking bored, and that's what's on TV, and so we just consume it. And that's valid, but it's obviously beyond that, as we've just spent like an hour discussing, it's beyond that.
But like, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, literally, if you break it down, Tiger King was true crime. So
true. Yeah.
I mean, like, it's just something to pay attention to.
Something to look at on big screens and small screens. And well, it's getting late for me, who goes to sleep with my girlfriend at like 9 p.m.
Yeah, we gotta go. I gotta go like do some stuff to get ready for.
We got things to do to stay warm so we don't freeze.
Yeah, I gotta like do some other small preparations for the hypothetical apocalypse that might be happening for the next 48 hours.
We'll do another thing on another topic in 2 weeks, and then we'll post it online, and then we'll tell you that it's online, and then hopefully you listen. Our engagement has gone up quite a bit in the past couple of weeks. I'm very happy about that. Thank you, friends.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Yeah. And I think that we've officially surpassed listeners versus the number of people who we know in real life, which means theoretically people we don't know have heard this. So that's pretty wonky. Yeah. So thanks, strangers. Appreciate you.
And thank you to our listener for suggesting this topic. This is our first listener suggested topic, and I appreciate it. And hopefully we can do more. Please send in more suggestions. Suggestions. Yeah, subscribe and like, and oh my god, we didn't introduce ourselves again.
Okay, we'll do it now.
If you're still listening, I'm Jess.
I'm Megan.
And we are the host of The Funny You Should Ask podcast.
Which you just listened to.
Yeah. Thank you. Follow us on social media at FYSAPod on Instagram and Twitter. Email us at FYSAPod@gmail.com.
Yeah. But if you want to say hi, that's where you say hi to us.
Or just if you like it. If you don't like it, please don't email me. I'm sensitive. Send us pictures of your dogs. All right.
That's it. Later.
Peace out.
Placeholder for outro.